Okay, any views expressed are the opinion of the guest. That's not a representation because the programming reflects that bold politicking with four eyes. It's really no competition. Suffocating with the dope, you know I be twisting. Real ninjas out in the field, now we cotton picking. Not to mention our intention to cover topics and many of the subjects. I got more lines than the deli at the Publix with King Pharaoh, pole politicking. I'm pistol whipping rappers, jeopardizing hip hop position. My opposition, intuition, prediction, like writers on The Simpsons. To witness the glimpses from higher up dimensions. My bitches be fighting gremlins like Phoebe Cates. Let me cook stovetop oven, easy bakes. Hydroponic with them seaweed flakes. Yeah, these rappers started from the bottom, power bottom. TD Jakes unfollowed, talking about have you ever been swallowed. Regardless of race, color, or creed, you get Apollo'd. We pole politicking. We straight pole, politicking, ticking. When it's a great show, you got to listen. Listen to that pole, politicking, ticking. This for the pole, politicking, ticking. We straight pole, politicking, ticking. When it's a great show, you got to listen. Listen to that pole, politicking, ticking.
All right, welcome back to Lambo Truck Radio. Yeah. Now I'm messing with y'all. All right, welcome back to
Lambo Truck Podcast.
Yeah, Lambo Truck Podcast. I like that. Now, welcome back to Pole Politicking, your home for hip hop. Right now, we're live on YouTube, X, Twitch, a lot of good stuff. 1212, I'm in the place to be with Abstract Mind State. How y'all doing today?
What's good? I'm
glad to be here.
What's Glad to be interviewing y'all. Like I said, I ran DJ Edition told me about y'all. Then I went across the limit to that music. I was like, man, this music is really dope. Like, I was like, man, it was really good. Like, I don't have nothing to say. Like, I don't got nothing to say bad. Like, it was dope. EP, you on there spitting.
Thank you.
EP got that heat, but like I said, it's really good music. And it's like, I think I was reading the article and they said, Ye said, like, the people need it, it's good for healing. And I'm the same way. Like, that's some feel good music y'all got going on.
Man, we appreciate it.
Yeah, no doubt. And I just want to kind of take it back a little bit. I just want to talk about how did y'all meet? Look like you said y'all met like over 20 years ago.
20.
older, a little more farther than that.
We met at 90.
Look, oh, okay.
We met in 1990. We stepped out the game for 16 years, so 20. It's been 18 wow. Since. You know, yeah.
So how did y'all meet?
We met at the outside of the train station on the way home for spring break. We both attended Jackson State University. We didn't know each other here in Chicago. We met outside of the train station going home.
Wait, Christmas? I thought it was Christmas. You said spring break. Was it Christmas?
Well, it was Christmas for break.
Yeah, one of them breaks. One of them breaks. Look, we keep, yeah.
So how was Jackson State back then when y'all was going?
The same way it is now. The I Love.
Super live. Super, super live. It was just, they having just as much fun now as we did back then. One thing I can say that they're getting to enjoy more than us is the renovation. You know, they gotta definitely have an upgrade, but it's the same old fun we was having. They having right now, you know.
And then I always, since y'all are Jackson State alum, I want to ask y'all about the a lot of people was talking about the Prime effect. So how do y'all feel about Coach Prime coming there? Yeah. You know, staying for a couple years, leaving. What do y'all think about that?
Well, you know, EP the sports, she the sports person, but I'll just my answer is quick. I just say the effect he had was positive, and it was really it was really a vibe, I say, you know, because of the energy he brought, his presence of who he was and his legacy and all that. I just personally don't like the way he left. I mean, I understand him leaving. I just felt like he left kind of, it's just the way he left. It could have been better. Like, it was very abrupt and very, you know, I don't know. It just seemed like it was a better way to exit than how he did, like, you know, right when they had the championship. It was just a better way to me. I didn't like how he left. I wasn't trying to hold him back, you know, his money and his life. Although he stood on the soapbox and preached that it wasn't about money and God brought him there and all that. But, you know, that's, you know, I just don't like how he left. So that's it.
So I like the fact that someone with that much shine on him, they also shined a light on HBCUs, because we've had celebrity coaches at HBCUs, but they weren't as celebrated as Deion Sanders. And along with his presence, he bought a lot of money funding for the SWAC period. A lot of now famous athletes will be coaching at HBCUs now, because they see the spirit and the appreciation that they wouldn't get from PWC. So I may agree with Greg with Old School about how he left. I think it would have been more apropos if he would have just finished his commitment.
Right.
Finished his commitment, yeah. Then went ahead and broke out. But I do understand, from being a person that started off watching college football before I even started watching the NFL, the lure to teach or to coach at one of those schools. Because I remember when Colorado was that school. A lot of people probably didn't watch
it.
Yes. Cordell, yeah. I remember when Colorado had the best running backs, the best, like Alabama was always a thing, but to be asked, and that was when Deion Sanders was in college, when he went to Florida State, Colorado was a powerhouse. So I think the lure of just being asked to coach at those type of schools was like, it overcame the loyalty that he had to work at an HBCU. And I think pretty much he did all he could do for Jackson State and for HBCUs, because he brought the shine. He brought, you know, people know that we exist now. We've never been on TV this much. And now it's basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, they got SWAC basketball games on ESPN. You know, it's going to be, baseball games are going to be, you know what I mean? So he did that. That was him, you know? So I'm not bitter. I'm understanding of it. I just wish he would have, a little bit, you know, gave a little 2-week notice, like, you
know? Right. A proper, it just wasn't a proper exit. Cause a lot of people get it twisted. Like, you don't want to see that man make his money, man. I want to see any black man make his money, but it was just how he exited, you know, on his, and then you could say how you exited on an institution of, like, just our, it's us, that's our people, that's us, that's literally a black college.
And,
like,
and so, he had to know that when he left, you know, his kids was coming too.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
He took the core of the squad with you.
He took
Hunter too.
Running backs, he took the safeties, he took the core of the squad.
Go ahead. No, I was just saying, my fear too was, and it happened with a couple of celebrity athletes, because I saw a few. I was afraid of like us not being taken serious now, like, oh yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? Like that other people like him, when they saw what he did, say, you know what, yeah, I probably should just not. You know, and it changed your idea of wanting to do it. You know what I mean? Because it's, you know, if we don't know how an influence works. Sometimes influence can work negatively too. So
I think his success, because I mean, he won. Like, I think his success would probably override, with most sane people, would probably override the exit plan. You know what I mean? He was really successful.
Yeah.
He was really successful. He was an excellent coach in the SWAC.
Right.
You know, he can relate to us and we can relate to him. So.
And then So I kind of just wanted. So you were saying y'all met at the bus stop.
Yeah.
So how did that end up? Y'all ended up rapping together, forming a group.
Well, yeah. So as we waited on the train, because back then Amtrak was like the key. That was like one of the top resources to go from Mississippi to Chicago. It was the ride that Amtrak, because it was such a smooth, easy, low expense way to get from school to home, and it was super fun. So while we were on that train was heading to Chicago. By the time it leveled out, but you know how a plane does once it reaches this altitude. Now you can get up and move around. Same thing with the train. Once it gets going, it's a certain point they let you get up and move around. And once we was able to up and move around, you know, the whole college way was to go to the bar car and just set it off. You know, we playing cards, the talking, the jokes. And for us in that era, it was all about the music. So we freestyling, we kicking rhymes, and they cut the music on, and I was the MC. So I started kicking rhymes, not even realizing that we didn't invite an EP to hang out with us so she can share in our libations. And and when we start, you know, once we start drinking and it feeling good and laughing and camaraderie, and I start rapping, she jumped in behind me and started kicking the verse out of nowhere. I wasn't even expecting, nobody was expecting it. And after she rapped, the whole bar car kind of like went crazy to hit this female, you know, sound like she did. Like if you listen to our songs, you know, you're like, whoa, to this day, it's like, whoa,
right.
You know, so, and that's how it was then. And I was like, whoa, man, wait a minute. What's going on? So now I'm questioning her. What's her name? Like, is she down with a crew? And, you know, like, I'm trying to figure that out, because I'm like, you need to be down with my crew. And that's when she broke down and told me, nah, man, I'm kind of alone in this. You know, I never even been in a real major studio or anything. You know, I did a little, she's like, I did a little demo. I got one song, but blah, blah, blah. And by the time we met, man, I had a whole, you know, like 6-7 song demo. I was already doing shows, you know, and everything. So my whole thing when I met EP was to help her get where we were. I was supposed to be grooming her and putting her down with us and kind of like guiding her career, so to speak, you know, but it turned into a partnership. it ended up being us in a group instead of me getting her ready for a solo career.
And then I was reading, they were saying y'all was the first male female rap duo in hip hop.
Period.
And then I was, yeah, at
you
first
start
I was
researching,
like,
then you start looking.
Yeah, I was like, nah. And then I started looking, I was like, yeah,
no,
I was like, everybody, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's crazy when you think about it.
Yeah. It's kind of weird. And I know what happened. It's so funny for us because the first thing you think, soon as you say, nah, what you mean, y'all the first male-female duo? It was the Fugees. And then you'd be like, oh, wait a minute. No, that wasn't a duo. That was a trio.
Right.
And then you say, well, what about Diggable Planets? Okay, well, my bad. That was a trio too.
Right.
And then somebody always reaches totally left and say something about like artists that made songs together. Well, what about Jay-Z and Foxy? You know,
yeah, that was only one song. Yeah,
like it was a song. They wasn't a group. Like it wasn't a duo. Like we are the only male female duo. So
it's
we Wonder Twins.
But I guess I just think I was like, damn, because I just look at, you know, hip hop copies a lot of R&B. So I was like, you know how they had Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell. So I was just thinking like, why nobody ever ran with that? Because they already had it in R&B, so I was like, why nobody else had it? But I was like, dang, I can even
but you
today,
know what?
I can't think of nobody.
But you know what? Even they just came together for the album. You should have said somebody like Peaches and Herb or Ashford and Simpson. Or, you know what I'm saying, Captain and Tennille, Donnie and Marie. Like, those are actual groups, you know, but it never happened in hip-hop. I think
you know what it is, man? They're like, I think that shit probably be on purpose, man. Just cause you like, just so they're not promoting like a black man and a black woman together. So I just think that shit might be on purpose when you think about it.
Look,
I was like, man, why is that? That's like, that'll be so easy to do. And it never been done. I mean, besides y'all. So I'm like, that's crazy.
And you know what's dope? The space was left open because we did that, you know, in the 90s, and then we walked away from it for 16 years. You know, and came back, and our space was still sitting there waiting for us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's That's what I'm saying. That's why I kind of feel like it might be on purpose a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got to ask the million-dollar question. Why? What happened for the 16 years? Why y'all? What did y'all call that? Break or what did y'all call it? Why 16
years? Hiatus. Our hiatus.
Right.
It was a mutual parting of ways because we had so many ups and downs and more downs than ups as far as the group was concerned. And so, Gree went to work with Kanye and I went to work on getting my life straight.
Yeah. So. I stepped behind the scenes of the music business and she stepped behind the scenes of her own life that she kind of neglected because of the music. And I just got away from the hustle and bustle of trying to make it as an artist. And it became more fun and I guess fulfilling helping other artists. And I was a part of a lot of successes. And it was just like, I was just riding that out, you know?
Yeah. I saw you, I saw you was on Yeezus, the documentary.
Yeah. Genius. We were both on Genius because there's a scene where Cootie, the co-director and person who created the whole thing and owns all the footage. He was at our release party, Abstract Mindstate release party in the movie. But you see me all through the film because of the role I played, you know, in Kanye's life, you know.
And so you also see a performance with us with Kanye.
Oh yeah, yep. Yeah. They show a scene. Yep, they sure did. They show a scene of us. We brought him out as a special guest at this club we used to have called the New 50, I think it was called, because we had the 50-yard line and that was like the New 50. But yeah, man. So yeah, I was all over Genius. You know, I made it through all three episodes because it was hard for me not to be in it. Because again, I worked so close with that situation for so long that was just our life. For everybody else, it was a documentary and a film, but for me, it was just my life because, you know, nothing was scripted. Cootie was the genius who thought it was worth recording everything we were doing, you know, because one day it would mean something, and it did.
Yeah, I was reading your first A&R Good Music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Good Music. As soon as he formed it, it was like he was trying to put the structure of put it together, and I saw my place because I was always helping. I was doing all the A&R, what A&R does with him, you know, and I knew when he started the label, you know, that was one of the only, it's funny because I never really asked him for anything but that position. That was the one thing I actually said, hey, who's the A&R Good Music at the time? And he was like, yeah, nobody, you know, and I was like, that's what I want to do. And everybody was like, oh, well, when I say everybody, really Don C, it felt like I slid him some money because Don was like, oh, that's a genius idea. That's great. Yes, perfect. Old School Ice Greeter, A&R, yes. Because everybody knew I knew how to take a record from start to finish, you know.
Yeah. I guess I want to ask you far, because it feels like they don't A&R, like it kind of fading away, like, A&R and so what's your definition of A&R and what A&R supposed to do?
Yeah, well, what A&R actually is one of the part of it is what I just said, a person that can kind of help an artist take a record from start to finish. But A&R also is the liaison between the artist and the label, because it's so many things that you don't want to bombard the artist with to stifle the creativity, and the A&R takes up slack because the A&R is actually a creative as well, unlike a manager who's strictly business and probably don't even know how to talk the language. A&R actually is a creative, and a lot of times a lot of A&Rs are artists or just some form of a creative themselves, so you have a lot to offer in terms of song finishing, a song ideas, concepts, bringing in producers. A&R is the person that will bring, you know, the pieces together, whether it's a producer, musicians, you know, the things you need to complete the album. They should be able to turn to their A&R and say, hey, I need a I need a guitar player. You don't even have to look. Your A&R, I got that. You know what I'm saying? And should have the relationships or the Rolodex to be able to make those calls and make it happen like Johnny on the spot, so to speak. And
hey, listen, let me interject. It ain't too many people you can say, give me, because listen, even today, Ye calls Greg and say, hey, give me a man, I need KRS-One number. And Greg just go through his phone and just sit like he got everybody though. That boy, he is the industry Rolodex, straight up.
Yeah,
it's not a joke.
Yeah, it's crazy. This is the problem I would say with music now, in my opinion, is the A&R role. You just said it. Them kind of playing out or slowly alleviating the A&R role, as well as artist development. Now, I think about those two roles. Artist development used to make sure that the artist was prepared for moments like we having with you right now. How to conduct yourself in interviews, how to carry themselves in public, let's put it in current day, how to react or act on social media. That would be artist development. You would go through that in development. But then you have your A&R to make sure your record is staying on focus, like that you actually have a concept, and whatever your concept is, you know, your A&R is there to keep driving, you know, keeping you focused, because an artist can oftentimes be all over the place. You know what I'm saying? And so an A&R's job is just trying to help that focus and drive that. So those two roles, man, when those two roles got played out, the industry, I mean, they still exist independently. You get what I'm saying? Like if you have an OVO, or like in our case, we had Good Music, or whatever your independent situation is, you can have your A&R, and it's always somebody playing the artist development role. But when the major labels just took that job or those jobs away, the music got bad, because now you got artists that got potential or talent, but they making directionless, kind of like nonsense records. You know what I mean? And it's just taking forever. And they all sounding the same, you know, because if it was some A&R and then some artist development, a lot of this stuff wouldn't sound the same. You know?
Right.
Because they just alone, these artists just alone to say, oh, that's what's hot. I'm about to make a record just like that. And that's all of them are doing. So it all sounds the same now, you know.
Mm. Yeah, I want you to, so I want to take us, like I remember back in, I want to say around 2020, Ye put out the tweet. He was talking about Yeezy Sound. He had y'all name on the roster. Take us back to that time. Did y'all already know about that?
Yeah. He had us
on the roster.
Right. So did y'all already know about that, or was y'all surprised about it, or how did that go?
No, we knew about that part because prior to that, he had persuaded us to come back, because we weren't thinking about rapping. We weren't thinking about forming a group. Like Greg had started living his life, you know, doing everything at Yeezy other than, like, he was everything. He did everything. And I, like I said earlier, I had went back to school and I started a whole nother profession. And so I get a call from old school one morning. I'm getting ready to go to work, and he tells me that Kanye want to put us back out. That's, you know, 16 years since we did even a mixtape, right? So took him about 28, 30 minutes to convince me that he was serious. It took Ye about 38, 40 minutes to convince Gree that he was serious. And so I got out to LA. That was like maybe a Monday or Tuesday. I got to LA maybe that Saturday, or was it Friday night or Saturday, one of those?
Saturday, something like that. Ye wanted
me to come that day. You know what I'm saying? But I couldn't just, you know, I was working. So
Love
I couldn't
everything, just,
yeah. Yeah, real life, right?
Yeah, he was like right now. Like, yeah.
So when I got out there, you know, we went to the Energy Center and had a meeting with Kanye, and he pretty much, you know, told us the plans and why he wanted to do it. He's like, we pretty much are needed. The type of music that we do is needed at that time. It still is. Really? That's prophetic.
Yeah, right. He literally said we were going to, our music was going to heal people and save lives. He said, we are the elders. We have to teach the kids. And y'all always been doing that. And it's time for like a group like y'all again, and I think they need to hear it. And you know, me and EP work with something being meaningful is something we can work with, you know what I'm saying? And you know, like she said, it was a little I was a little apprehensive, she was a little apprehensive, but then when you think about it, when we really thought about it, it was like, what can we lose? Only thing we can do is gain. We were living our lives. It wasn't like we'll rap for food anymore. We were both comfortable. We were both achieved a certain level of success in what we were doing. So it was kind of like, you know what? It can't like hurt us. You right. know what I'm saying? Like it can't hurt us. It won't damage, you know, like marriages won't fall apart. We won't lose any houses or, you know what I mean? So we yeah. said, let's just see, you know, and Dream Still Inspired came out of that, you know. So 27 songs got recorded.
Yeah, I'm going to say, so how long have y'all known Ye? Because from my, it sounded like he was a fan of y'all back in the day. That's why he wanted y'all.
He was a big Abstract Mind State, you know, like fan supporter or whatever, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's on a few of our other projects prior to him doing a project with us.
Yeah, yeah. This was just the first time that he ever like did a whole project like on us. But he, our very first album, he produced a track on our first album. It actually wasn't for our first album. It's just that he was on the rise as a producer. The song he did, it was called Pain. It was for the, you remember that show, the HBO, I don't know if you, it was an HBO show called Oz.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
You remember Oz?
That made me know I was going to be a correction officer, and then I started watching that show and I said, nah, I'm good.
This is going to work at Parchment.
Yeah, I was like, I'm good. I started watching that Oz. I was like,
dude. EP said Parchment.
I know about Parchment. Yep.
Parchment. You was going to catch an Addie BC at Parchment now.
I know, right? That shit was crazy.
But, yeah, but we were supposed to do that song for Oz. It was called Pain. And it was about, you know, we came up with this story of being stuck in jail or whatever, like off a mistake. You know, I got stuck in jail off a mistake at EP. It was funny. I mean, you know, that was Pain. That was 26 in California. That was that story. But yeah. Pain was just like, yeah, it was for Oz. And bottom line is some things happened without getting into the long story about Oz. Some things happened with Oz. I'll just say this. Oz, initially, they created a soundtrack for Oz. And it initially was for unsigned independent artists. But then when the owner of the label found out how popular that TV show was, he didn't realize what he had in his hands with the TV show asking them to put the soundtrack together. And major label artists on the West Coast start submitting music for free because the show was so popular, they just wanted to be a part of it. And of course, the money ruled. So when people like the Dog Pound and Snoop affiliates and, you know, all of these huge West Coast acts start giving them songs, the more and more the independent artists got kicked off, you know, and it became a major project. So with that being said, when we got our opportunity to have an album and we were supposed to be, you know, the biggest thing in Chicago, we was like, man, we didn't use that Kanye song. Let's put that song on our first album, which was called We Paid, Let Us In. So that's how he ended up on our first album.
And then I was reading, he said he made 300 beats, but he gave you like 100 beats.
Yeah.
Wow. He let us choose from 100.
How many did y'all have to listen to?
100.
y'all listen to every one of them?
Yeah, we listen to every one of them.
Yeah, I actually had to listen to 300 because in my position before those beats were a part of our album, I was there for him when he was making them, you know. We was out in Wyoming when he first was making it goes even farther. I went record shopping with him to pick out the records he sampled that became what's famously known now as the Wyoming Sessions, the Tiana record, the Pusha record, the, you know, all of those EPs, those seven song EPs we put out week after week, you know, ESC Ghost, all that stuff.
The Nas album too?
Yeah, the Nas. I got it right here, the Nas album. We were supposed to have been the sixth album, wasn't it? Five albums? Yeah, it was 5 weeks, five albums in 5 weeks. We were supposed to be, Abstract was supposed to have been the surprise sixth album. We didn't want that, and we glad it didn't happen because we were the only ones out of that group that was kind of like the wild card. Nobody, we felt like you couldn't put us out like that because we're not Pusher, we're not Tiana. We didn't have all the exposure that Cudi had, and definitely not Ye, you know. So we knew we couldn't come out like that. So when it didn't work out with us being the sixth album, we was happy with that because we knew we needed a real rollout. You know what I'm saying? To explain who we were.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so what exactly, because I was just trying to understand what Yeezy Sound was, because it said y'all was the only ones released.
Yeah.
Like, only ones that released the project off Yeezy Sound. So what exactly was Yeezy Sound? Or the intentions of Yeezy Sound?
It was a platform. The actual term Yeezy Sound came from a guy named Noah Goldstein, who was one of Kanye's, what I would say was one of his best engineers, because he was one of the first time, and I've known all of Kanye engineers, and he was the one that kind of locked in with him so crazy that he just used to know what he wanted before he even said it. But Noah came up with that idea because at the time when we were at the Energy Center, everything was revolving around sound. Ye was into speakers, and he wanted to create a platform for music, kind of like a title. Mm-hmm. You know, everything was around sound. So Noah came up with this idea of Yeezy Sound because he had Yeezy. So it was like Yeezy Sound. He was like, that can be the label. That can be everything related to sound. Like, it can be the label. It can be a streaming service. It can be, you know. Yeah, speakers. It was just a platform. Yeezy Sound was related to audio. You know what I mean? So the label side of this whole Yeezy Sound, we weren't the only artists. If you look at that roster, you know, that roster had us, Tony Williams. He was bringing the Clips back together, you know, as a group. And it was also North was supposed, you know, was a part of that.
I saw Shy the Prince.
Yeah, and Sahaja the Prince. So that was the roster. But we were the only ones to date that ever actually released material under the platform. And, you know, and now, you know, we're in a new situation. We're no longer associated with Yeezy Sound. We're on old school label. Yeah, Honest
Music. The new project is completely produced by Young RJ from Slum Village.
I
just talked to him like a month ago.
Young
RJ is so dope. He's so dope. Like,
I saw y'all on tour with them, Slum Village.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It starts actually, the first date is April 4th.
Yeah, April 4th. This will be our first. This won't be our first run with them. We did It'll be our first European tour. We did
West Coast.
West Coast. We did the West Coast. We did a West Coast run with them. And I think that, that was definitely influential in us ending up on this European tour because my understanding from their team is we did a good job.
We were talking about sound, so I just want you to talk about Abstract Mind State sound. Like, what are y'all trying to put across in your music?
The same thing that we've always done. Lyrics. So we're not one of those groups where the beats beat the lyrics or the lyrics beat the beats. Like, we always seem to choose music and producers that we elevate their tracks and they elevate our sound, like our lyrics. It never fails. We've never worked with a producer where the sounds didn't meld.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that's about, but like this new project, and honestly, I didn't think after all of those years coming back together, the songs kept getting better and better and better. So Ye kept giving us more and more beats. We kept, we already had the beats, but he kept saying, do another song, do another song, do another song, because they kept getting better and better. And I honestly didn't think that a project that we did after Dreams Still Inspire would be better, but it is.
It is.
It's better than Dreams Still Inspire. And it's more hip hop. Mm-hmm. It's more, you know, boom bap. The tracks are.
Mm-hmm. We even more laser focused on our topics. Like, it's a vibe. It's a vibe. It's different. It's very different from Dreams Still Inspire, but the same in the sense that we didn't.
I think we stayed on topic. I think Dreams Still Inspire. We had to. We couldn't get off topic.
Well, it was. It was crazy. But it's a vibe though. It's a different vibe. Like that's how, like I say, we have Chicago soul, then you have Detroit soul, and both of them are soul, but they're two different styles of soul, you know.
And I go deeper than that. I'll say that Dreams Still Inspire, we was kind of proving to ourselves that we could still do it.
Yeah.
Like because we didn't know.
Yeah, we that's true. But, yeah. Yeah, coming back after 16 years was of not even putting the pen to paper for ourselves, at least that was a trip. So yeah, Dream Still Inspire was us getting back on the bike again to ride, and the art project is us popping willies and doing all the tricks that we used to do. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
We
pulled out our tricks this time. So that's why it's a better album. It's even more comfortable. We always comfortable. When we get together, when Abstract gets together, then, you know, we Wonder Twin activate our powers or whatever. Like it's going to be what it is. But this one for me personally, I got to rap on a sound that I always been very fond of. The whole, you know, that sound that Slum has, that thing that Dilla and T3 and Batien created that has transcended, you know, into the Slum core. We got to enjoy that sound through Young RJ. He got to sprinkle a little of that sauce on us, and it was fun, man. We got to play in a new, like I always say, we got to swim in another pool, you know.
Yeah, I like that the single I heard, The True Story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, shout out to Young RJ and Dave Ordinary on that one. That was a collab. Shout out to Simpton Dele Matolo, the female vocalist on there. We got that. I don't know if you hear it. It got that little light, because that's a South African co-producer and a South African vocalist, so it kind of got that little, you know, you getting a little bit of that kind of Afro beats vibe up in there, along with the soul, you know. So
the EP, I want to ask you about they call it now, like it's like basically like right now you got a girl rap wave going on. So how do you feel about the that wave right now? Like it's a lot of girl rappers out, but they're not necessarily rapping about, like, their topics is not necessarily what, like, you know, you got the Sexy Reds, you got the, you know, you got a lot of them are vulgar.
Just listen to the names. Listen to the names. And that'll tell you if you really want to hear. Listen, Sexy Red, Rhapsody. Who would you want to hear?
You don't want to ask me.
My fault. But no, I don't. I mean, Greer tell you, he'll tell everybody else. I very, very seldomly listen to female MCs and rappers.
Yeah,
I'm still listening to Latifah, Lauren. You know what I'm saying? Rod Digger. I'm still listening to them.
Yeah,
like I still, you know, these chicks now they still don't listen. They're not winning. Not against me. Not against Foxy. Honestly, they not doper than Kim.
Yeah.
Like they not doper than Kim. If Foxy would beat Kim down to the earth, you know what I'm saying? So they ain't got nothing for me. I don't want to hear it. You know.
I feel like you need to be giving out some master classes.
I ain't doing it. I try to just let my lyrics and like Grease say the you know what I'm saying, the arrogance in my rhymes. I just say it, and everybody that hear it can take. I just know it ain't too many females that really want to see me. You know what I'm saying? It ain't too many females that really want to see me as far as like in that dojo. So
I'm gonna say she get kind of slack, but what you think about Nikki?
Nah. Nikki,
you don't think she can go with Foxy? You don't think she can hang with Foxy or Lil' Kim? I think
the old Nikki.
I was gonna say that too. The old Nikki
before she got Barbied out. When she came in like,
yeah,
giving it to her. She was scaring dudes.
Yeah,
but she watered herself down. Didn't nobody even have to do it. She watered herself down, you know, to do whatever she did and to fit into whoever she wanted to be, song she wanted to be on, and who I think she went more pop. Like I don't know, like a pop rap. But when she came in, it was hip hop over some gangsta ass beats, but it was hip hop. And but then she just went like super Drake on me. You know what I'm saying?
I wouldn't even give her like, because Drake's found a way to do his kind
she
of pop.
She do too.
But the only thing about Nikki is, in my opinion, is, you know, I'm gonna use a term that my guy Sakaya used, and I thought it was dope. Nikki's whole everything about her has she's a sore winner, is what I call her, sore winner. I got that from Sakaya, meaning like you got everything, you pretty much won, but somehow your approach to everything you're doing is angry, like something like you're not in the place you're in, and it's affecting her artistry. And in my opinion, because I'm a purist, so I remember
you remember when it happened, right? You remember who came out and she started.
Cardi B, right. And it was just like I felt like that was the perfect time for her to just let the space breathe and let Cardi do her thing, and she just show and prove. But you know, it just became a cat fight, and it started changing the focus. And Nikki had it, and somewhere in there, like I don't know, like EP said, it became more about, you know, she stumbled upon that first pop record on the first album. That was her exercising her creativity, and when she ended up getting a hit out of it, she almost didn't leave that space. She kept doing it. And the supporters like us who like to the lyrical her, that was really, you know, she didn't give it to her. And like I say, Drake still give it to us. Drake still gives us what, you know, if we complain, like Drake, I like what he did this last time. He put out that record that I didn't care for at all. And then he realized this, or Drake's smart. He realized the audience or his fan base or core fan base was like, man, what's up? You done hit us back to back with these, like, you know,
lullabies.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But then he went and did the Scary Hours joint. And I love that Scary Hours EP, because he was just barring out lyric. He was talking. Drake knows how to talk his talk really good. And he's, you know, and that's what I don't know. So that's Nikki.
I go back to your original question. Like, I love the fact that females are getting the shine now. I love it. I love it, because that means I will, and that means my group will. So it's due, because honestly, there's never been an era like this.
Yeah.
There's never been an era like this. Like, you had Warren, you
a
had
a couple,
like,
of them sprinkled out. Yeah.
Over a period of time, but like all at once, when like it's so many coming from it hasn't happened. It hasn't happened.
But I remember hearing Lesto growing up. So shit, it was there. Mm-hmm. But I would say, did y'all have any memories of Boss?
Oh man, I used to love Boss. Come on now. Like, I had that album, you know.
I wasn't a real fan, but Gree was.
Yeah, I was rocking with Boss. You know, everybody was on that record, too. Like, you remember all the interludes and skits was, like, all the Def Jam cats or whatever, like, Sticky. Like, Onyx was on there. You know, she had AMG was on there. She just had a bunch of those. They put a supporting cast around her of a bunch of hot people, too, so... Yeah, Boss was dope, man. Rest in peace to Boss. Like, she put together a good record, you know. And if you peep, just like speaking to that, I was reading, I was on, you know, I was, when I saw the post about her passing, I read some of the comments and somebody was like, yeah, her career went down the drain when she got discovered that she really wasn't, she was like a, you know, well off,
and she wasn't gangster.
And I was like, no, that wasn't the truth, because she put her record started off with an interlude from her mother saying, I don't know why you're doing this, you know,
right.
Her name was Michelle or something. She was like, you come from a good household. She put it out herself. It was on the record, like, you know, and her whole
thing. They didn't discover nothing.
I'm like, that wasn't the reason. That wasn't what happened with her. She was, I think, putting it out there that she was being rebellious against her upbringing, because she was brought up, you know, very silver spoon, but she decided she gonna hang in the streets and smoke and hang out with the, you know, with the gangsters. And that's what became her, you know.
So what would you say happened?
What happened to her career?
Yeah,
I think she was a little, like a lot of, like even us, she was just a little ahead of her time. Boss was so gangster, like NWA, that it was just, I think, a little too hard to swallow then. You get what I'm saying? So she had a couple of hits and then it faded and then it went away. I think it was just too much. You got to realize how hard it was then on females, and that was unfair, because EP will tell you I absolutely love female MCs and always have, and it was hard. So, but Boss was almost like a dude. Remember, she had the locs and the bandana, mm-hmm. and she rapped with a gun in her hand, and all, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was just, I just think it was a little too much for whatever was trying to be her fan base. But she could rap, though. She actually could rap, you know. So
Then what y'all think about the I'm gonna ask y'all what y'all think about the Vultures. I know Vultures 2 about to come out, but did y'all listen to Vultures 1?
Mm-mm.
Oh, you ain't listened to it yet?
Mm-mm.
Nah, you know, our stuff sounds strange, but every time we working, he seemed to be working. So, you know, I block all that out and just been focusing on our stuff. I haven't even, you know what I mean? We got so much going on right now with the new record and the tour that's coming and all of the business is going on around that. And like EP just told you, she don't even, you know, if it's not us working, she don't really even be immersing herself in like all the hip hop, the whatever that's going on. And me, it's too much going on with us, because I handle a lot of the business for
us. Handle all of the business.
Yeah. So, you know, nah, they haven't. I see clips just like everybody else that's going across Instagram, but I don't have time to really, you know what I mean? We don't have time to really get into that. It's like, it's abstract mind state, you know?
So what do y'all think about, just far as, like you said, y'all started in the early 90s to now. So just what do you think about, just like, I guess, what do you, far as the rise and journey to hip hop since y'all been in the game?
Wanted to go back to 90s hip hop.
For real?
Really bad. I think, and I say this to myself, I hardly ever say it to anybody else, but I remember when gangster rap was like all the rave, reality, gangster rap, whatever moniker you use, and how that meant something for those times, right? That was because a lot of people that didn't rhyme like that also lived like that,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, even though, you know, I didn't rhyme like that, but I grew up like that. Like, you know, I right. throw, I sprinkle a little bit here and there, but the base of my rhymes was just lyrics. It wasn't mm-hmm. really talking about, you know, my family and what we've been through and what we continue to go through and all of that different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I think, I guess with maturity, you just started realizing that that type of music was needed back then to do what it did, like bring attention to certain things, right? But now it's like we don't need it no more. You understand what I mean when I say we don't need it no more? It was a tool back then. Yeah. It was a tool for change. Like gangsta rap, like that movie, that end of that Walk the Compton, Boys in the Hood, whatever the name of it.
Yeah, Compton.
It was true. Like they needed, we saw why they made Fuck the Police. Right. Like we saw why they made all of the songs that they did. They lived that. But right. they lived that so their kids didn't have to. And I know that's right. the biggest fucking cliche that people have ever, well, I do this so you won't have to. That's true. So now, fast forward to 2024, your mama is a nurse at Rush Hospital. Why are you shooting up Inglewood? You didn't have to do it. You don't have to be that. Because dues have been paid for you prior, so you wouldn't have to. I won't even say that this is even akin to the gangster rap of the 90s. This is not akin to it. This is self-destruction.
Yeah.
In its purest form. That's what this is. Because the gangster rap back then was calling attention for change.
Yeah.
It was calling attention to shit for change. This right here serves no purpose but
this right here is death and destruction. It's not.
That's all it is. It's dark. It's death. It's triple death. Death and destruction.
I saw out here where I live, I saw some graffiti on the wall over here, and I'm like, bro, like, first off, rent over here, just to rent something is about 3 G's. So everybody over here, parents working, it's a B city. I'm like, ain't nobody, people want to be, everybody want to be gangster now. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this ain't no gangster. Like, I know what a hood is, and this is far from the hood.
You know what happened? I'll say this. I guess we sold it too good because, you know, our generation or the 90s era, or just golden era, whatever you want to call it, that era back then, did such a good job telling the stories and painting the pictures because they were great lyricists. So the stories were told so well that the folklore or the tales of it all went on for generations, almost like, you know, the tales that we heard as African people or whatever, and they thought it was real. So somewhere in this generation or the last, you know, handful of years, they really are doing this stuff. And we already know back then it was all just a movie, kind of like a Hollywood directors. You know, wasn't nobody, man, Onyx wasn't actually 100 deep in the street throwing their guns in the air. But that's what they said in the video, you know, so throw your guns in the air. And they wasn't really doing that because guess what? You couldn't even have a successful career if you did that because you would end up in jail. You know,
they did shoot up that Source Awards, though.
Yeah. No. But I'm saying this, though. This is the reality of all of that. It's always the people who talk about it actually either lived it. Like, for example, look at like 50 Cent. He actually was in the streets.
Yeah.
He actually was getting down like that. He got shot 9 times. But what is he doing right now? He just keep doing everything.
Entrepreneur.
He changed his movies. Life back then.
Exactly.
He stopped doing it back then.
And that's what
he
I'm saying.
He's still rapping about it, but he stopped doing it.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. The difference between what the kid's doing now, the EP was talking about with the death and destruction, 50 Cent talking about it because he lived it. These kids, they just skipping, they going right through it and they getting in and they killing each other, you know. And it's no, like I said, it's no, like EP just said a great thing when she said it was fighting for change then. Now it's like just death and destruction. Because NWA and Public Enemy always were the same group in my eyes. You know what I'm saying?
Just one from the West Coast, one from the East Coast.
Yeah, they're the same group. It sounds funny until you really think about it. NWA was Public Enemy. They was just Malcolm versus Martin. You know what I'm saying? One of them was by any means necessary. The other one was trying to like ban everybody together. You know
who is that? Who by any means necessary? NWA.
NWA.
Yeah.
They was like, if we got to get the rifles, let's do it and get what we, you know, and Public Enemy was like, come on, like we got to fight the power, we got to band together and da da da, you know. NWA was like, I don't care, we got to get the guns and shoot. We want our freedom.
What Pac said, we riot, not rally.
Right.
You know, West Coast riot, East Coast rally.
right, he said it.
Now, I was noticing something yesterday because I went to one of my homies' house and he had on some Guru and some Grand Puba. And I was like, damn, this is kind of hitting me the same way. Like, you know how your grandparents used to listen to like Frankie Beverly and May,
OJ's.
That's how that music hit me now. So I was like, oh, but I was like, dang. I don't be wanting to feel like that, but I was like, this music ain't giving me the same feeling as that music. Right? But They always be like, oh, you just getting old. But no, it's true.
No, you know what? It's true all the way down to the frequencies. The frequency, the music frequency. Prince was really good at that. He understood frequencies. Man, the frequencies changed in the music. The lower vibrational frequencies excites different parts of our body. And those lower frequencies ignites lower self, so all of the dark demonistic, all that stuff, when those dark chords, think about all that, the trap and all of that, it's those dark melodies and chords,
long bass,
man, and it's exciting. It's exciting something within you that's like in a darker space than you go listen to, like you said, the Grand Poobahs and all of that. Man, all of that stuff made you feel so good and hopeful and, you know, charismatic and excited and happy. You know, it's definitely
it's
real. It's real, you know.
It's working.
We always, if you listen to a whole album, you will hear me and EP talking about living life and life this, life. Because we actually, it's about living. We want to live and life is about living. We don't want... I would say I don't want to die. I don't want to get shot and killed. I want to live. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I want to live and travel and see the world. So we talk about it in our rhymes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I was telling Slum Village the same thing. I was saying like, I would say the same thing about y'all. Like, I would say y'all make like that chakra music. Like when I listen to it, it feels good.
Oh, that's a bar. I'm keeping that.
Yeah,
that is.
I'm keeping that chakra music.
Chakra music.
Yeah, you can feel it though. You feel it all in here. You like, yeah, this shit feel good. Like the beat.
I'm writing it down, man. I'm writing it down.
That's good. Chakra music. We received that.
That's a whole song, yeah.
Yeah. I created a genre called adult contemporary hip hop.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just the space, and it's not about any age or anything like that. It's just about the sound and just saying it, you know, encompasses the traditional aesthetics of hip hop, which is just the boom bap, the lyrical, you know, cadences and all of that stuff. And that's what that chakra rap is like, just the stuff that get in your chakras and make you, you know what I mean?
And I was gonna ask y'all, so y'all, are y'all like, I know y'all took the 16-year hiatus. Are y'all locked in now for 16 years? Or what's the future hold for y'all?
We just having fun, you know.
But why not? Why can't be another 16?
Put it like this: the way we try to do it now is in a way that can set us up where we won't even have to do 16 more years of it. It'll be just, I mean, you know, if for some reason 16 years from now we still want to do music and we're capable, that's cool. But, you know, we just want to enjoy what we're doing and take it day by day, I guess, you know.
You know how old we'll be in 16 years?
I guess my whole thing is too, like, I know they always talk about age and hip hop, but everybody getting older. Shit, it ain't just you. If the fans get older, so it's like, does age really matter when everybody getting older?
No. Age doesn't matter. It's just about your will.
Yeah, right. Age don't matter.
When I'm 68 years old, I don't want to be running across no stage. I won't be running across somebody beat with a coconut in my damn hand, chilling. Right. Chilling, not having to do anything.
Look, living in Africa. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, my dual citizenship.
Do y'all think hip hop is gonna stay alive?
Oh yeah, hip hop.
Yeah, back now.
Y'all don't think it's gonna get y'all don't see it getting gentrified like the other arts we have.
Well, it already got gentrified. Like, so whatever gentrification that had happened, it already has happened. Like those who showed and proved rose to the top, and those who didn't, you know, we don't know about them. You know what I'm saying? I think hip hop is here to stay. Only thing we're hoping, and I know I can speak for both of us on this, only thing we're hoping is to see it get back to the foundation, the lyrical side of it, the fun loving side of it, the light side, not the dark side. You know, that's what we mean when we say stuff like we want to see it go back to the way it was. We're not saying take us back to 1990. No, we're just saying bring that spirit back, because that spirit was a good time. That was positive.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, how Ye said y'all music heals. Why do you believe your music heals?
Because it's the opposite of what's killing them. It's totally the opposite of destruction. Like our music, we talk about stuff to improve your life, not end it.
Mm-hmm. We speak life. EP said that in the rhyme. Speak life. We speak life. Like, you know what I mean? We are Abstract Mind State is real food versus processed food. We're the home cooked meal versus McDonald's. We're the garden growing our own vegetables versus going to the grocery store.
GMOs.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And that's it. That's you know. That's it right there.
And then what would y'all like to say to y'all fans and supporters?
Keep supporting.
We're bringing the vibe back.
We bring the vibe back
for y'all.
Yeah, help us.
Vibe back for y'all.
Yeah, help us out.
Did y'all have them same, was the same fans around, or did y'all have to like just get new fans? Or were the same fans waiting on y'all from
both. Yeah, there you go. Both EP.
We got old fans and new fans. And surprisingly, 80% of our new fans are young fans.
Yeah, they are.
Listen to that bullshit.
Yeah, they're young.
But they've been needing something different.
Yep.
They don't want to die either.
Yeah, they've been talking to me and EP, man, a lot in our DMs and our IMs, all the different little things, man. They be talking to us. They be thanking us for this music and how they've been waiting for something like this. And you'll be surprised how many... AP said something in the other interview, something to the effect of, if they're not exposed to it, how can they gravitate towards it? So, you know what I'm saying? What I hope our fans do is help expose us more so we can be the option. Like EP said, we can offer, you know, some diversity. You know what I'm saying? Because it's a lot of same old right now, unfortunately, in the rap arena, you know.
All right.
You know,
yeah, I want to say thank you for coming through politics with me.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, let me ask you a question. Because you know, we come from Chicago and you know, do a dime Poe pimping, but what's Poe politicking?
Well, I actually had I just interviewed AK like a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm locked in. But Poe, my name is Chris Porter, so Poe.
Oh, there it is. See, I didn't see. Now, if I didn't politic just then, we wouldn't know.
Yeah, then we politicking. So
okay, there you go. I like it. All right, I like it. See how that made sense? That's Abstract Mind State. It made sense.
How long you been doing this?
Man, I've been doing this since 2008.
Okay,
you're welcome, Kimmy Coop.
Kimmy Coop. Yeah, I've been doing this since. since 2008. So I interviewed a lot of my favorite interview so far I had was Jay Prince. Jay Prince, my homie. I had him on the show like twice already. So he just bought a 2,000 acre jungle.
Oh wow.
He already had an island.
Oh, that's wow.
So Jay Prince going crazy right now. Shout out to Jay Prince.
Because he know we gotta leave this place.
Yeah, he
gotta get up out of here.
Gotta get up out of
this. This boy about to implode.
The US is
we gonna leave it to them ops. We gonna let them have this. We built it, but we gonna let them have this.
We gonna let them have it. We gonna get back to the land. We gonna get back to the land. The land want us back. We gonna get back to the land. They can have this.
I'm out of this bitch. I'm giving 5 years. I'm giving 5 years, if that much. Let me hit the number. Hell, it's gonna be 3 months.
Look, Abstract Mind, stay supporters. You know what I'm saying?
I want to say. I was just gonna say I really appreciate talking to y'all too, man. I really enjoy y'all music, and it was good to hear about y'all, learn about y'all.
Thank you. Catch up. Look, whoever listening worldwide, please catch us out on the Fun Since 92 tour with Slum Village, you know.
Yep, first date, April 4th, Bologna, Italy.
Yeah.
Rome.
Yeah, and definitely.
We out there from the 4th. We out there from the 4th to May 5th, April 4th to May 5th.
A lot of dates for you to choose from. And please, please, please stream True Story, Abstract Mind State. True Story is on all of the platforms.
First single off the brand new album that'll be out soon called The Art Project.
Yes, yes.
And are y'all happy that y'all...
Produced totally by Young RJ of Slum Village.
Are y'all happy that y'all reunited and came back and put some new music out?
Oh yeah, for sure. This has been fun. Like it's been fun. We always we crazy without the music. We just got so much years of jokes and time together but it is fun to make music with the time that we've had together, and you can add music into that. So hell yeah, it's been great.
I was going to talk to y'all. I forgot to mention how it must be an underground railroad between Chicago and Mississippi, because my granddad was from Chicago. It was a pipeline going from Chicago to Mississippi. Something going on there.
My family's from Utica, Mississippi.
Okay.
Yep, right between Yazoo and Jackson.
Yeah. You know, that's the results of the Great Migration, you know. You know, after slavery, when you know, the Southerners were heading north for work. You know, you trekking up 55 north. The first place you get to is the west side of Chicago. You know, Chicago was the big place, was the major city. You know, so Mississippi and Chicago are gonna always be linked. You know, forever.
Y'all want to hit them with y'all social media and anything?
Yeah. EP.
I got it right there, though.
Okay, you got it right there. Well, that's the groups.
The
group. Mine is at EP, D as in dog, A, Hellcat.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I'm at Old School, but it's spelled OLSKOOL _ ICEGRE, Old School Ice Gree. And then you see the groups, like whoever's listening and watching, you can see the groups right there.
Yeah, I guess because somebody gonna be like, man, why you didn't ask them? So I gotta ask y'all how y'all came up with
that. Right. Matter of fact, some people might just be listening. So at Abstract Mind State, how about that?
How did y'all come up with y'all names?
It was a change.
Original name was Ebony Portress.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you talking about the group or our names?
Both, all three.
Okay. The group, yeah. Well, the group, we went through a change. You know, we used to be a group called Mad Skills. And obviously, if you know about the rapper Mad Skills, that was one of the reasons we had to change our name. We feel like we had it before him, but he blew up and got a deal. So we had to change our name. But anyway, it was just a change in everything about us at the time. And we felt like our music was moving into a new space. And we felt like our mind state was just on something abstract, you know. It's a story too, how we ended up with the actual name Abstract in Mind State, but we was on a different page. We had moved to a different page from transitioning from Mad Skills to Abstract. And Old School Ice Gree, I always been Ice Greed. That's been my rap name since I started. But the old school came in college. I became old school Ice Greed in college. But it was just to pay respect to the foundation, the forefathers who did it before me, because at one time old school was looked at as a sign of disrespect. And I just embraced it as a term of endearment to pay homage to the people who did it before us. And I added old school to Ice Grease. So that's how mine happened.
Ebony, where the Hellcat come from?
Shit. I don't even know when it was added, honestly. I
remember when you added it, because I think when you put it in a rhyme and you start using it, because you know in the Stu Pastor way you said EP's a Hellcat, funky like, and you start using it, you start saying that, like, you know, you used it.
I remember using it. I didn't remember calling myself that after that. I don't know.
Yeah. And I was saying, and I was thinking about the Coop, but then the Coop, they saying that was a band too. But I was trying to think, I was like, well, the Coop might have been a duo, but they weren't a duo either. You remember the Coop?
The Coop.
Yeah.
You don't pronounce the P, it's the Coop. Oh. Yeah. I actually was at one point in time, I was cool with Boots. He used to, when I worked at Loud, he used to always come up to Loud, and me and him used to talk a lot. But the Cool, no, that was still two guys and a girl DJ. They were a two guy duo. They just had a female DJ, DJ Pam. So that wasn't, nope, that's not it either. Mm-hmm. Abstract Mind State still stands.
Well, stop looking, man.
No, I'm just glad I got some hip hop history that I can claim fame to. So I can be like, yep, I interviewed the first hip hop female and male rap duo. I had them on the podcast, so I make sure I represent.
Right.
Anybody try to say anything else, they gotta come through me.
right.
All right, y'all. We gonna have to get y'all in the future, and y'all have a safe tour.
Thank you, brother.
Once again, stream, download True Story, Abstract Mind State.
Y'all. We out. Make sure y'all get some merch off my website, Popolitik, and my Shopify.
Popolitik.